morning, all. This is a meeting of the Safety and Operations Committee, July 25, 2019. First order of business is our agenda and a few administrative items. If there are no objections, we can consider the agenda approved as presented. Any objections? Seeing none, the agenda is approved. So we'll now move on to the approval of minutes and just a technical matter. The membership of the committee for purposes of today's meeting consists of myself, Goldman from Maryland, Mr. Smedberg, chair from Virginia, Mr. Erudian, or is it Mr. Bulger? Mr. Bulger from the District of Columbia, and Mr. Rouse representing the federal government. So moving on to approval of the minutes from a previous meeting, which was from July 11, 2019, I'd like to ask for a motion from a committee member to approve the minutes of our July 19 session. Could I get a motion to approve this set of minutes? Thank you, Mr. Bulger. Could you get a second for that? Thank you. Any discussion? You all had an opportunity to review the minutes?
Yep.
All right. All in favor of approving the minutes as presented, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Aye as well. Okay, thank you. The minutes are approved. So we have two items on today's agenda. The first is to affirm the board's support of the additional peak period service on the Red Line, which began in December of last year, a result of ending the Grosvenor turnbacks. When the board approved this additional service last year, it asked staff to come back to this committee with information on ridership and operational performance before voting on continuation of the extended service. After that, Mr. Rob Puentes, chair of the Bus Transformation Project Steering Committee, and Rich Davies from the Boston Consulting Group consultant team, will brief the committee on the project's draft strategy and recommendations, which were released in May, along with feedback received from stakeholders and the public on the strategy and recommendations. I'm therefore going to yield the floor to Mr. Letter and his team for the presentation dealing with the Grosvenor Turnback Ending Review. Mr. Letter.
Okay. Good morning. Our goal today is to update the committee on the performance impact of the additional service on the Red Line, which was the result of the full elimination of the Grosvenor Turnback that began in December of 2018, and ultimately to recommend that the board affirms continuation of this service. Our performance overview will include on-time performance, ridership numbers, and an evaluation of the overall customer experience since the elimination took place. We examined on-time performance across the entire Red Line and found that it improved by 3 percentage points during the 6 months immediately following the elimination of the Grosvenor Turnback, compared to the 6 months immediately preceding the change. Notably, this shows that the additional service did not have a negative impact on other Red Line customers. System-wide, our OTP improved 1.5% over this same period, from 88.6% to 90.1%. So Red Line on-time performance improvements were slightly better than the on-time performance improvements on other lines. We then narrowed in on the stations that are most directly benefiting from the additional service, and that is Shady Grove, Rockville, Twin Brook, and White Flint, and found that their OTP also improved immediately following the elimination of the turnback. We also spoke with our rail transportation personnel to ensure the elimination of the turnback did not introduce hardship regarding train spacing, terminal operation at Shady Grove, and they confirmed that there were no significant issues. We examined ridership to see if the additional service helped attract new riders. Ridership to and from stations outbound of Grosvenor increased by 4%, including a 7% increase at Twin Brook, while the Grosvenor station itself remained unchanged when it came to ridership. This analysis captures any increase in ridership benefiting from directly from the elimination of the turnback, counting both entries and exits at the stations in question, including trips entering south of the turnback but exiting north of it. Ridership grew in the same period on the Red Line, so not all the growth was caused by the elimination of the turnback, but the news is positive. We also examined the effect on train crowding and found that the additional service significantly reduced overcrowding and evened out the train loads. Other elements of the customer experience also improved, including reduced wait times at stations north of Grosvenor. Overall customer travel time improved on the Red Line. For example, customers traveling from Shady Grove to Farragut North during the AM rush saw wait times decrease by 2 minutes on average. This outcome is also consistent with the benefits of the other most recent changes we made to improve service, and that was the elimination of the Silver Springs turn back as well as the Mount Vernon turn back on the yellow and the green line. Early results from eliminating these turn backs are as follows. Customers traveling from Glenmont to Union Station during the AM saw wait times decrease by a little bit over 1 minute on average. And customers traveling from Columbia Heights to Gallery Place during the AM rush saw wait times decrease by a little bit over 1 minute as well. Prior to the service improvement, Shady Grove Station experienced extreme crowding in the evenings when trains arrived. It sometimes elicited safety concerns and long lead times on escalators, or long lines, I should say, on escalators from platforms to the mezzanine. Since eliminating the Grosvenor turnback, the time required for the average passenger to exit the station fell by 16%. We believe this is due to the more evenly spaced ridership due to more frequent trains that are entering Shady Grove. Metro is also conducting an analysis to further reduce the risk that added service will have a negative impact on service reliability. The study will identify infrastructure investments or operational changes needed to support full line operations, including potential changes of reduced headways as well as 100% A-car trains. The study, which should take approximately 6 months, will focus on rail yard capacity, terminal operations, ridership, and crowding impacts. So in conclusion, we believe the results demonstrate the benefits our customers are now receiving on the Red Line. I request the board affirms continuing these service patterns indefinitely into the future. And that is my presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Lederer. This is really a good news report, and it validates the board's determination last year to end the Grosvenor turnbacks, an issue that took us many years on behalf of Montgomery County and Maryland to convince the board to take that action. Thank you. I just have one question to get the ball rolling this morning, and perhaps we can get back on schedule. On slide five, you have it's the slide that says enhanced customer experience. You have a reference that the reduced wait times north of Grosvenor benefited 30,000 trips weekly. I assume that refers to passengers, riders, customers actually boarding trains at the stations north of Grosvenor?
Correct. Boarding and exit.
That's what I'm trying to get to. Is it just boarding so that the total number benefited is 60,000 for those that entered the system downline and then were going to a destination in the evening north of Grosvenor?
It's both.
So the 30,000 is both?
Yes.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Any other questions from members of the committee? Mr. Hunter.
It's a question for you, since you wanted this turn back.
Absolutely.
Is this your eyeballs seeing this every day when you're on the Red Line? What do you think?
Well, I don't see it every day on the Red Line, except I do see it downtown.
Okay.
You know, coming here to board meetings, where I notice that the trains are more evenly distributed in terms of passengers, where I used to be able to notice that, hey, you'd get a train which had started out in Shady Grove, which was just packed full of riders, and then you tend to, if you waited for the next train, that would be a train originating in Grosvenor, which would tend to have less people on it. So I think that was a pattern that I noticed, and I'm sure riders who use the system every day noticed it. And I think this has been a big win, not only for the information provided by Joe Lederer in the report, but for the county at large, because the effect of passengers boarding more upline and parking their cars more upline has been to reduce congestion on Rockville Pike, so you reduced traffic congestion, you reduced pollution, and you made development of some of those areas north of Grosvenor, White Flint, and Pike and Rose, and Upline Station, more attractive for development and people who live and work there. So I think it's been a win-win across the board. Thank you. Any other questions? Other board members? No questions? Mr. Rouse?
So just curious, Mr. Leader, from the operationer standpoint, I didn't see anything about crew staffing and operator staffing. Were there any changes that were necessary there in terms of additional hours, overtime, or just additional staffing in general?
Yes, there was in the beginning. We put some additional supervision up there just to work because it was a four-minute headway coming out of the terminal, but that since has been eliminated. But there were increased number of crews because we had more trains now going. So they had some additional trains to the line, but that was part of the overall package.
That was it. Thank you.
All right, seeing no other comments, I'll entertain a motion for a board affirmation of the increased peak period service by eliminating the Grosvenor turnbacks and having all trains serve Shady Grove that began in December 2018.
Second.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. This motion, now approved by the committee, will be now dealt with by the board later today at the full board meeting. So I just want to make everybody in the board and the members of the public aware that we'll be then dealing with this as a full board later on today. Thank you. Mr. Letter, thank you very much. All right, we'll now have the team on the bus transformation project. I see some familiar faces.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just make a few comments before I turn it over to Rob. Okay. you know, this is particularly for some of the alternates that are here today. As we've discussed in the past, the bus transformation project is sponsored by Metro, but it's not being performed by Metro. It's being performed by, in effect, a steering group and outside resources. Again, it's sort of a regional effort, not an internal effort. It's been led by Rob Prentice from the Eno Center, the executive director there, so we appreciate his time and efforts to do that, and he'll be talking shortly. But really, the task that we gave the steering committee is a total rethinking, a fundamental rethinking of the role that bus plays in the region, both in terms of moving people and its role in supporting the prosperity of the region. So in May, the group did come out with their draft strategy of recommendations, and it was based on extensive engagement with customers, advocates, bus providers, jurisdictional funders, transportation departments throughout the whole process. So Rob, along with Rich Davies, you mentioned from the Boston Consulting Group, they're here to provide sort of that background and where they currently sit with the process. With that, Rob?
This is an information item that the board won't be voting on. As the general manager explained, this is a project that's still underway, and the group is bringing us this information sort of as a status report on their project on the path to a final report, which will be issued later this summer or early fall. Gentlemen, you want to introduce yourselves?
Indeed. We are in the middle of the process now. This is what we're presenting today as the draft strategy back from May. So. Mr. General Manager mentioned, my name is Robert Puentes. I'm with the Eno Center for Transportation.
For the purpose of the audio recording, so we know who's speaking.
I'm sorry. Sure. I'm Robert Puentes. I'm with the Eno Center for Transportation, and I've had the pleasure of chairing this executive steering committee since it was formed last fall to work on this project. I want to point out a couple of other executive committee members that are here in the room: Bob Buchanan, Jack McDougall, Deborah Ratner-Salzberg, David Richardson, and Ann Stubbs. There's about a dozen other folks from around the region. It is a very capable, high-caliber, all-volunteer group that has dedicated their time and their expertise to this really critically important project, the purpose of which is to create a new vision and a collaborative action plan for bus in the region, with the overall goal and the overall intention for bus to be the mode of choice on the region's roads by 2030, serving as the backbone of a strong and inclusive mobility system. We focus a lot on rail conversations here in this region and across the country, but bus oftentimes is neglected. And so this effort, as the general manager said, is to think about how bus should be performing here in the 21st century at a time of very transformative changes across the transportation landscape. As you all know, bus ridership is declining in most major cities and metropolitan areas across the country. However, those that did see ridership increases, places like Seattle, Las Vegas, Indianapolis, have each taken their own transformative efforts to change the way that people think about bus in that region and making their systems perform more effectively. And that's what we strove to do here with this particular project, because we believe that if the bus system is not working for people, for riders, for customers, for workers, if it's not working for providers, not just WMATA, but the other seven bus providers in the region, then the entire region is going to suffer. The bus carries over 600,000, 620,000 people a day, and it has to be a fundamental part of the economy of the region. So, the next slide. What we're hoping to cover today, then, is to tick through the draft strategy that was made public back in May. So this is the strategy as of the middle of May when it was made public. A lot of work has been done since then. And we're going to talk about the extensive outreach that's gone on to the general public, to local governments, to a range of different stakeholders. There's been a very formal and structured process to do that. And that outreach has directly informed the strategy that's being presented here today and will continue to do so. So what we're presenting here is from May. There's been a lot of work since then and will continue to be until we get to the end. We then want to get your comments and reactions and then discuss kind of next steps and everything going forward. Next slide, please. So just at a high level, the draft strategy elements that we think are going to help us achieve that overall goal is to, just quickly, to make bus more customer-focused and to make it an easy-to-use option that people actually want to ride, to give priority to buses to effectively move people quickly and reliably, to provide frequent and convenient service, to balance between local and regional responsibilities, to streamline back office functions and share innovations across the system, and to establish some kind of regional steward to ensure this transformation actually happens and this doesn't become a report that just sits on the proverbial shelves. So what I'd like to do now is to turn over to Rich Davies, who's heading up the consultant team, to talk in detail about the strategy elements.
Thank you, Rob. Again, Rich Davies from the Boston Consulting Group. Thank you, Chairman and members of the committee, for having us. I wanted to spend a few minutes just walking through what the particulars were of the recommendations of the strategy and then summarize some of the key input that we received from stakeholders over the last couple of months, as Rob mentioned. So first, and probably the recommendation that received the most affirmation from the region was making sure that the bus system should be more customer-focused and easier to use so that folks would want to ride. So what does that mean? Expanding marketing efforts. We actually heard this from a number of elected officials, including, I think, Chairman Mendelson from the district. Making buses easy to understand with legible maps and consistent route naming. For example, the map behind me, your rail map only has rail, does not have your key bus routes, a subtle but probably an important change that could happen. Creating a single mobile app that allows riders to plan and pay for trips and access real-time information. There's some of that happening, but a broader and a more inclusive effort would certainly be helpful. Making bus fares clear and consistent across the region. I think what we heard from some stakeholders is there was an effort maybe a dozen years or so ago among the jurisdictions where the fares were closer or aligned, and that has over time, given fare increases and other changes, probably floated away. Bringing that back to some more consistency would be helpful. Bringing pass products that work across all bus systems, so encouraging folks to use all systems. Looking at reduced fare products, in particular for low-income residents. Of all the, I think, questions that we asked, I think our survey for the strategy was about 3,000 respondents. This was one of the top recommendations that the public asked for. Allowing a free transfer between bus and rail, something that I know this board and board's past have considered. It's something that's fairly standard in the industry in the U.S. Incentivizing more employers to use transit benefits speaks for itself. And then really the infrastructure, making bus stops safe, looking at a fleet with energy-saving green technologies, for example, electric buses typically are a higher capital cost to begin with but a lower operating cost going forward. As I mentioned, so key input received here, really a broad support across customer-facing improvements, strong support from the public on free transfers and reduced fare programs. And at this point here, we're looking for ways to consolidate some of these recommendations. I think one of the inputs we received was there may be some redundancies. On element two, next slide, was prioritizing buses on major roads. And, you know, interestingly enough, I think this is probably going to be in many respects, the most transformational What do I mean by transformation? I think that's been a philosophical debate people have been having in this project in the last 12 months. But I think fundamentally what we heard from the public is if you get the basics right, that will be transformative for us. Frequency, reliability, on time, affordability. If you get that right for us, that will be transformative. So in particular here, encouraging the jurisdictions to prioritize bus and major corridors within their jurisdictions. The district, of course, has been rolling out some programs as of late, some of the other jurisdictions as well, but really having a coordinated, thoughtful approach with WMATA in particular about where those major corridors should be prioritized. Looking to adopt guidelines across the region, so what would qualify, generally speaking, for this kind of a treatment? Developing enforcement programs that maximize effectiveness. I mean, this is a key challenge for every city and every jurisdiction across the United States is enforcement. For example, there are some jurisdictions now putting cameras on buses that would allow automated ticketing of cars if they're parked in bus lanes, as an example. Offering incentives to the jurisdictions to encourage implementation of regional priority guidelines. It's something potentially partnering with WMATA and its capital plan to work more closely with the jurisdictions to roll these out more quickly. And then finally, having a coordination. Bus itself is not going to be the silver bullet to improve congestion here in the region, but thinking about other ways that the jurisdictions, the board perhaps, and others are influencing congestion mitigation efforts, congestion pricing, curb access management, et cetera. Key input we received, as I mentioned, faster, more reliable service will be transformational in the public's view. Linking commitments with incentives, are there ways for the commitments to be linked to potentially monetary incentives or capital potential improvements? Conveying a sense of urgency, there have been some bus routes and corridors that have been on the books for 17, 18, 20 years that are still not moving. And so how can the region move more quickly to implement bus rapid transit and on particular corridors. Here, point was really having the steering committee and the consulting team talk about what the operating cost incentives are and capital funding. I think for some board members, when we were before you 6 months ago, we noted, for example, that the speed of bus has been reduced by about 13%, I think, over the last 10 years. There's a slide in the appendix. And that costs you about $30 million in operations a year. So actually, if you can run service more quickly and efficiently, you will be reducing your costs from a headway perspective and a fuel perspective. And then add detail on the proposed guidelines. So just more meat on the bone, if you will. Next slide, slide element three, frequent and convenient bus service that is fundamental to accessing opportunity, building an equitable region, and ensuring quality of life. So three things here, really developing a regional bus network plan that realigns routes and creates more efficient customer-focused bus system. This is what some jurisdictions have already done, Houston, for example, and others. I think this is going to be a strong recommendation from the steering committee, which will ask WMATA and the jurisdictions to work closely together to really take a look across the region about what bus routes are working, what aren't, what are some of the opportunities to make improvements on particular routes. Adopting consistent guidelines about what the right time of service is, and then flexible on-demand service. Again, you're starting to see these kinds of pockets of pilots in the region. I think what we're saying here is bus does not have to be a 40-foot vehicle that's running every 8 or 15 or 20 minutes. There are opportunities to deliver better service that might not look like the bus of old. So key input here, as mentioned, flexible and on-demand. What are some of the other options and opportunities to emphasizing land use connection? I think that was something we heard a lot about. Obviously something that the steering committee's charge was not around land use, but really important to understand how land use is affecting mobility, including implementation costs, what is this going to cost, and then acknowledging that there are already some current plans in the books and how can those potentially be enhanced. Element four, probably and admittedly drove the most concern from folks, which I'll explain, but first let me explain what the recommendations were. So this was balancing local and regional provider responsibilities by positioning local bus service to meet the jurisdictional needs and regional bus service to deliver on the regional needs. Essentially here, what the suggestion was to really take a hard look and see, are the jurisdictions running the right service and is Metrobus running the right service? And what did we mean by that? that really taking a look to see if local jurisdictions should take a more greater responsibility in running localized service, and that WMATA would continue to retain its regional role in bus service. And then from that, developing a 10-year plan that would optimally allocate routes between systems for applicable routes. Essentially, in many respects, reallocating bus service and back to the jurisdictions. Most of the jurisdictions, if not all, commented that this was a challenging element for a variety of reasons. I think for Maryland in particular, there were concerns from the jurisdictions on funding and what impacts if this were to change. I think for all of the jurisdictions, there were rightful specific questions about, well, what would a transition plan look like? Who would have owned the assets? Who would own the buses and the bus garages? Which the steering committee, and I think we admit, would certainly need to be worked through. But suffice to say, there were a lot of questions here as opposed to support. One of the items I think here was the basis that there was opportunity for cost savings. The jurisdictions, as you all know, run service more cheaply, largely because of pension costs and some of the costs that WMATA is required to provide. Is that a compelling enough reason to go forward with this? So I think on this one in particular, and obviously we will want the committee's feedback, but this one, the ESC is, I think, taking a step back and really thinking about what are some ways to, without burdening the jurisdictions with services that they're unable to run, are there ways, nonetheless, that the region can work together to look at a rate rebalancing? Element five was streamlining back office functions and steering innovation. So we did a survey of the jurisdictions to look at where there are back office functions that could be shared, either by WMATA or by someone else housing those, and where there are opportunities for cost savings. I think the answer, preliminary answer, is yes, there is. Establishing a regional mobility innovation lab to drive continuous improvement. You've got a lot of pockets, as I said, of goodness happening in the region, but is there an opportunity under an umbrella to coordinate that? And then developing regional standards for bus data collection, formatting, sharing, and analysis. I think it's fair to say that the jurisdictions in WMATA possess lots of data, but the sharing and particularly the analytics that could go behind that to improve service could certainly be stepped up. Key input, we certainly heard support for consolidating back office functions, but a question was really, is the juice worth the squeeze? If we did consolidate this, what does the savings look like, and is it worth the time and effort to do that? And then innovations, as mentioned, are already being piloted across the region. What can the other agencies learn from that and leverage? And finally, and I'll stop talking and obviously open up for questions and comments, Chairman, thank you for being patient, is element six, which is, okay, so if these five elements prior to are really going to get us the transformation, what's going to enable it? How do we make sure, as Paul said, that this is not a report that just sits on a shelf and collects dust? I think we reviewed many of those Blue Ribbon panels and other reports over the last 35-plus years, some of which still had very good recommendations that haven't been implemented. So how can we do that? I think the steering committee proposed a task force that would be responsible for bus transformation project execution, and then after a three-year period, transferring it over to a formal coalition of jurisdictional representatives who actually have the authority to implement. Holding agencies and the region accountable for prioritizing bus as a primary mode of transportation, and then finding an independent group or groups who could publish an annual scorecard, if you will, on how the region is doing relative to implementing bus transformation. I think the key input here was, don't create too many bodies, but at the same time, don't ask the jurisdictions and the district to legislate a new body. See if there's someone or some organization that can push this forward. Be clear about the scorecard, and then be clearer about what additional capital and operating funds are necessary for this, but throughout. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'm happy to stop. Obviously, there's more detail in your materials, but I think, as Rob said, our hope today was to hear your feedback as well as we are working with the steering committee to make some changes to the recommendations. But thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you very much for your report. It's good to get that update. And I want to thank the other members of the steering committee for their participation in this venture. Since this is an information item, I think we'll just have a broad-based discussion without regard to whether you're a member of this committee or just a temporary member of the board today. I think what I'd like to do is to get the ball rolling by giving you some of my reactions, personal reactions, not on behalf of the committee or behalf of the board. My reaction, I've been following this actually fairly consistently for most of the development of this bus transformation study because of some early conversations I had with the Montgomery County Department of Transportation and some of their concerns and interests in where this project was going. So I think there's some good things here, but I think there's some areas that I want to highlight where I would appreciate if you could do some more on those issues. I think the good things are really found in elements 1, 2, and 3, the call for bus-only lines, the proposal for free transfer between bus and rail, traffic light synchronization, the use and development of a mobile app, all great suggestions. It's going to be great to have them in one document. The one that you sort of downgraded that I want to urge you to upgrade is the idea of going to a all Wi-Fi on all buses. I say that because the chairman and I were in Jacksonville past weekend for an APTA meeting, and the Jacksonville system, 300 buses, all Wi-Fi. Montgomery County ride-on, all Wi-Fi. I think the DC circulator as well has either all Wi-Fi and going that direction. So in terms of the ridership that you want to attract to bus, I think Wi-Fi is becoming a much more important aspect than maybe it was 2 or 3 years ago. So I would encourage you to take another look at the lack of really a strong Wi-Fi recommendation in your list. The areas where I think, you know, I would urge you to take another look at it, see if you can have greater prominence and perhaps more discussion would be the following all electric buses. I know you have a reference, but it's kind of a term that doesn't really tell very much. Modernize the region's bus fleet with energy saving, green technologies. I really think you ought to consider whether you want to give us a recommendation Metrobus should begin the process of going to an all electric fleet. I say that not just for the pollution benefits and the climate change benefits, but at least from the reports that I've seen over the past year, the operating costs and the maintenance costs of an all-electric fleet are less. And so since we have an interest in trying to keep the cost of Metrobus down or even reduce those costs, that may be something that your group should give serious consideration to bring to us. Again, bus infrastructure, you mentioned that, but again, when this all started, I thought that would be a big element of this project, and I thought that would be a big element of your recommendation, some kind of maybe starting of a plan of what a bus restructuring should look like. Nationwide, as you pointed out, that's been amazingly successful for Houston, places like Seattle, Baltimore, in restructuring their systems. As a Montgomery County resident, I'm always shocked and surprised how all the 30 routes end at Wisconsin and Western 40 years after WMATA took over the system. We still observe these borders between the district and Maryland. With Connecticut Avenue, most of the buses end at Chevy Chase Circle. There's nothing at Chevy Chase Circle, but the buses, the L buses, end there. You know, I really think you guys ought to take a hard look and come back with something a little more vigorous on bus restructuring. Low-income customer subsidies, again, you've mentioned that. You know, but I think that's something that if you could give us some more direction on, that's something that a number of systems nationwide are adopting or moving towards. The system in Seattle is one. New York City, I think, is going in that direction. You know, with as you ridership, as you know, which is, I think, what is your numbers, about 50% are low income?
51.
51%. You know, people who are really find difficulty being able to, you know, pay for the bus. Considering whether we should go to some kind of a low-income subsidy program and what seemed to work for Seattle and New York City. And it might be something that also addresses and helps with our fare evasion problem as well. You know, so to the extent that you can sort of give us a little more detail on that and maybe what it might cost, I think that would be tremendously helpful. I think another thing is bus rapid transit, which is not really dealt with, and even in your summary, in very good detail. You know, I think to the extent you can address whether there's a role for the region for bus rapid transit lanes, routes, corridors, whatever you want to call them. I know it's a big issue on the agenda of Montgomery County. I believe in Virginia as well, there's some routes being developed with bus rapid transit. You know, and what should be the Metro role? Should Metro operate those, or should it be combined with the jurisdictions where maybe Metro provides the buses and the build-out for stations and the local jurisdictions actually operate and pick up the cost for that? I think some kind of guidance there would be very valuable if it's the time and can go that route. And finally, the issue that's most controversial, so-called step four, dealing with the devolution of bus routes. I mean, what I call this is VGS for short. The three elements of this, as far as the county, Montgomery County is concerned, my colleague from Prince George is going to talk about their problem, are, A, buses. Is Metro going to supply the buses if they devolve bus routes? G, garage. Is Metro going to make space available in the garage? If you want local jurisdictions to provide these services, they need room in the current garages. And S, subsidy. How do you handle the subsidy problem? It's a big problem on the Maryland side because right now the money is going from the state to WMATA. So how do you suggest, or how can we move down a path where that money moves from the state directly to the jurisdictions in Montgomery County and Prince George's County if you want this to be a successful program? So I've talked enough about some of my personal thoughts. I'll shut up there and encourage others to contribute. Mr. Mulder.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Professionally, I've worked on this my whole career, and the big missing gorilla in the room is the road network, the interstates, the primary, the arterials, and Metro, or none of our bus operators have any control over the road network, the road system. So I haven't heard you talk about how for VDOT, MDOT, and I'll ask my colleague, DDOT, is reacting to having their road network be used by buses, or whatever we're going to call them in the future, BRT, bus lanes only, other forms Rich pointed out. And so I've wailed about this for my whole career. This is a TPP, you know, which I don't know what they do at TPP, which is the Council of Governments, okay? And what Annapolis, Richmond, and the district thinks about how they're going to play a role in this, because they're a major player. And we're a secondary player. We're a secondary user, okay? So that to me is the big question mark as to how we proceed. You know, and now my colleague from Federal Transit Administration, you know, how Federal Highway, you know, thinks about this. I have no idea. I don't think they think about it at all. Maybe I'm wrong. They don't think much about pedestrians, I'll tell you that. So, you know, and I've known Rich and Rob for my whole career almost, not as much with you, but Rob. So could you expose on how we should proceed given the fact that we don't own the road network?
Sure, I'll say that I think that this has been part of the conversation we've had with the local governments. I think some of them do.
Arlington does.
Yeah, Arlington, a couple of them, Fairfax Roads. And this is part of the pushback I think we got from them, is because they feel like they have more control over those local systems that they run because of this reason with the bus network. So I think you're hitting exactly on the right point. And this is what's kind of baked into this number four and why we want to go back and take another look at it. Because the governance questions that overarch this entire project are very complicated, right? There's no more complicated governance structure anywhere in the United States than this region. So this is, I think, what gets into all these questions. So the governance issues are front and center.
And to your point, John, we also, for I think in the last page of your packet, suffice to say, we pitched a pretty broad tent of folks to be involved in this process. And so the state DOTs, DDOT, some of the cities and the counties have all been involved as well, and that has come up. I think what I've heard is a willingness from all the jurisdictions to really take a closer look at this, understanding that congestion is a huge challenge and it's going to continue in this region. And while bus isn't a silver bullet, it's an important one to your point. Obviously, I mean, picking up the post, you see what DDOT is doing, for example, unrelated to this work, and you're seeing that in some of the other jurisdictions as well. I think the point here is there is some momentum, but going back to that element six, who is going to kind of hold the region accountable? Maybe this board, maybe someone else is going to be critical to continue that momentum. But you're right. It's a challenge that most, frankly, transit systems in the U.S. have, which they are responsible for delivering mobility services on roads and infrastructure that they do not control.
And I'll just add quickly that this is also happening at a time when all those jurisdictions, as you know, are taking a hard look at their curb space and the road space because of all the new different services. So this is actually happening at a perfect time for them to be having this conversation.
Well, I'll roll over my grave when MDOT and VDOT flex a federal highway dollar from the congestion mitigation air quality program that I and some friends of mine invented back in the 90s, and make it even harder. I'll turn over twice of my grave if they ever flex a surface transportation STP federal highway dollar. Okay, so there's money that could be used here that comes from the federal highway program in large chunks, as Jeff well knows. But they don't flex it. Okay, but they could for this purpose and other purposes. Last question I have, Mr. Chairman, is as you know, I've railed about the transit benefit program, having had a hand in inventing it. What do you mean by incentives? I mean, what other incentives should we be thinking about to get people to sign up for the transit benefit program?
That's a great question. I think a few items there. Certainly the benefit itself is obviously known, but I'm not sure it's entirely well known. So maybe, right? And so making sure that employers are clear about what it is, what the benefits are, as an example. I think that is, so incentivizing folks is probably just really informing them, is I think what we mean there.
Well, I'll give you an answer. There's a, $265 a month, up to $265 a month for parking, transit, and van pool. And there's a bike benefit I won't get into. Okay.
That's a benefit that's available under current federal tax law to any employer.
As of December of 2015, it was enacted as a tax extension program with other tax extenders. And it's permanent as a COLA that I argued for, that God rest his soul, Senator Moynihan agreed to back in the 90s. And I'll just say this, Mr. Chairman, our clients in the San Francisco Bay Area have an ordinance that says if you have 20 or more employees, you must offer the benefit to your employees. Okay? And it's administered by the Air Quality Management District. So they go around and check on, and there's fines. So I don't. That's not the carrot approach that I would take, but that's the case in the San Francisco Bay Area. We used to do marketing on this benefit all the time. I remember, Paul, back in the day, they had posters in the subway stations, ask your employer. Remember those, Rob? They were at Farragut. So I don't know, we don't have any metrics on this benefit in this metropolitan area. It'd be great to know what the penetration, the usage, how easy it is to get it, how hard it is. So I just quit on that point because I think it's a great, $265 a month would cover almost everybody's commute.
Thank you, Mike.
I wanted you to have that as, since it's your baby, so to speak. We want you to live, and we don't want to have you rolling over once or twice in your grave anytime soon. You're needed here. Mr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Rich and Rob, just some general comments that I've heard from various folks in, on the Virginia side of this, you know, sort of questioning this whole idea of a formal authority, given the fact that there are well-established coordinating bodies in Virginia, as you know, for instance, like NBTC or even WMATA itself. You know, how do we, you know, take advantage of those already existing boards? And even the local boards and councils within Virginia have pretty well-established transportation bodies and boards that do a lot of coordination already. So don't want to lose that aspect of things moving forward. There is also some question from some folks, you know, and want to learn more about how productive it is for this scorecard, and what is that going to look like, and what is it going to mean, and how are people going to use it and interpret it. So, you know, and just outright questioning, you know, do we need that at all, you know, given everything. The idea of the three transfers, you know, sort of the financial aspect of this, you know, how are we going to pay for it? You know, and how is WMATA, or how will WMATA, you know, organize this side of it with the 3% cap? So how will we, you know, how will we manage that? You know, other comments, you know, want to have people want to strongly encourage you and your team to continue to focus on and prioritize the strategic components of this, and I'll have to get back to you and, you know, articulate, you know, some further detail, but you know, keeping in mind that again there are already well established efforts going on, and I think that's something that is also highlighted, and I hope you'll get a copy of, if you don't have it already, a copy of the DRPT letter. And that is one of the things, you know, that they've highlighted, this redefining of the bus network. And while this, you know, is a good thing, they are, you know, they did express some concern in that letter that the work to date appears to be focusing on shifting routes from WMATA to the local providers, and questioning is, or just wondering is, you know, is there enough detailed analysis there to sort of go down that path right now, again, knowing what Northern Virginia is doing already in this area, you know, particularly amongst the jurisdictions. And then the consolidation of functions. Again, we've mentioned this, or I mentioned it already, but, you know, throughout the strategic recommendations, there is this reoccurring theme of consolidating functions, and, again, emphasizing that there are so many efforts underway already in Northern Virginia and with the district, you know, so just want to, you know, keep those things in mind. And also there is a letter from our friends at the TPB. If you haven't seen it already, I'm sure they forwarded it to you, but we just, I think, got it last night or this morning. So thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Good morning. So I'm new, but I do have a few questions. I'm trying to understand how you're defining the regional and local routes. How are you making that kind of designation?
Well, it's actually a board policy. You have a designation in place, and I will not profess to be able to describe it to you. It is incredibly, I would say, complicated, but it was established maybe 15, 20 years ago as a way to better balance how costs are distributed across the three jurisdictions for bus service that may or may not be touching a jurisdiction, right? I think what we have observed in our research is that more bus routes have been designated as regional, i.e. that Metro should be operating them, that under perhaps a different definition of costs, you would see as more local service. So I think what the steering committee was trying to do was articulate, you know, a formula that was created 20 years ago might not be appropriate today. It still may be, but it's certainly worth asking the question because it might be leading to unintended consequences of designating something regional versus non-regional based on the funding formula.
So I just think, for Prince George's County, we we're having a hard time understanding when one starts, one ends, and the other one starts. Could you speak a little bit with regards to the proposed specific impacts to Prince George's County?
In terms of
this whole local regional, I believe there are a number of routes that are being suggested for reduction.
So there are no routes that are being suggested for reduction, to be clear. The steering committee has been crystal clear. Maybe Rob could talk a little bit about that, that the intent is, I think the intent was, at least in the strategy, was to try to free up resources where you could be running more service, not less. They've been crystal clear on that point. How it affects Prince George's County, we have not done a detailed analysis. In fact, because the strategy is still a draft, I suspect we'll be making changes to it as a result of the feedback we've heard over the last 2 months. So to your point, you know, a lot of questions were asked by the jurisdictions. How does this affect us? And our truthful answer was we don't know yet, because the strategy is not, was not finalized.
And
we recognize that there are disproportionate impacts on different jurisdictions in the region, and the consultant team has provided a lot of information about that. So we've been able to absorb all this information. And to push back a little bit on the one comment, this isn't at all about devolution, right? So the committee is not trying to push some authority down from one level of government to the other. The idea is that this is a regional network. It's all designed to work together. And Mr. Chairman, to your point about the bus redesign piece, which the committee certainly is in favor of, but the thought was we need to reconcile a bunch of these different structural issues, at least just visit them, right, before we do the redesign, which is happening in lots of different places around the country, by which much more straightforward governance, one transit agency, one state, and all that kind of stuff. So the idea behind this fourth recommendation was to reconcile, at least take a look at the disparities that are there now. It is not designed to reduce service. We have seen all across the country that anytime stuff like this is done to just save costs, it's a failure, right? So if the committee is focused and if this whole project is focused on having more and better bus service and delivering on a goal where bus is going to be the mode of choice, we're not going to get there by moving around the deck chairs and just getting rid of those costs. So the idea is to start that regional conversation. We've heard loud and clear the pushback from the jurisdictions. We're revisiting that now in the context of all those other things we're doing.
So you're revisiting that how in Prince George's County?
Not just in Prince George's, but throughout the entire region.
But my question is specifically how in Prince George's County, how are you revisiting that?
Sure. I think Prince George's would benefit just like the rest of the region. If we think at that this particular element, with the context of some of the other ones, about the governance of the strategy. So there's a lot of things in here, as the chairman mentioned, that are around operations, but there's a lot of agreement, how to run the system better, all those kinds of things. But then how do you do that is kind of the second part of this. The regional structure is what it is, and we're not suggesting consolidation of local governments and things like that. But those are all going to manifest themselves in how you deliver on that top-line strategy. We haven't recommended routes to be eliminated, dissolved, pushed down, all of those kinds of things. None of that is part of this study. But we want to look at the governance structure to see if we can figure out ways to do things more effectively. Again, we've heard loud and clear that may not be something we may have to have a different way to attack that piece of it. So that's what we're doing right now.
So who do you work with in Prince George's?
I'm sorry?
Who do you work with in Prince George's County?
They've been part of the stakeholder group. There's been members from all the jurisdictions. There's been local outreach. There's been a number of pop-ups that have happened in Prince George's and elsewhere. And it's important to point out, especially when we talk about the general public outreach, that there is seen to be a little bit of a disconnect where the jurisdictions have a different view, I think, of the services that they're running than the general public when they're responding to their opinions about what's going on. The local governments, I think that the systems are running great. They like the way that they are, and there's a lot of good reasons to do that. We're getting a different reaction from folks in the general public, irrespective of whether it's Mobile Mata or whether it's the local jurisdiction. So there is something there that we need to reconcile between the users of the system and the providers.
Okay, so I'll drop this, but I would encourage you to continue your engagement with the county executive's office and also with the council, because it is a concern throughout Prince George's County at the time. So I'm going to move on and just reiterate a couple points that the chairman made. You know, in my my prior life at Pepco, there was a lot of emphasis towards innovation and new technology, and this the whole issue of Wi-Fi. You know, the generation now wants to be connected, right? And to me, it doesn't make sense to continue to move forward without providing that connectivity to them to continue to attract people to the DMV area. So I think that's important. And in that same vein, it also doesn't make sense to me if we're continuing to move forward with a fleet of vehicles that those vehicles aren't green vehicles, because all that's being driven by local and national policy. And it seems to me that the transportation industry should be on board with that. And that concludes my comments. Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair. Yep. Mr. Fuentes, you just answered Mr. Graham's question, but is it fair to say that, and there's an impression out there, that while we're not, or you're not proposing cutting service necessarily, this study for some appears to be designed to sort of shift service to local providers potentially. And this is something that's been, you know, sort of highlighted in some of the letters that we received, and, you know, some level of concern there. How our locality is going to continue to plan for this, you know, financially, but also operationally. You know, it could take some groups 5 to 10 years to prepare, you know, bus yards, get inventory up, reevaluate their bus routes, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So is that a fair statement?
Oh, we've heard that loud and clear, for sure.
Yeah.
And the strategy also is supporting, this is not the next fiscal year, right, where anything
right.
like this.
Right.
But it's designed to take a longer look. This is a 10-year strategy, quite
okay.
frankly. So anything would take that long. And there may be places where it does make sense. We talked to folks in Fairfax County, for example, and they have lots of ideas for running local service along Route 1. I forgot, there's a couple of other places
mm-hmm.
where they
mm-hmm.
have some priority things that they want to focus on. It makes perfect sense for them to do it as opposed to the regional provider. So what we're trying to uncover are things like that, where there is common ground, where there are improvements and modifications that do make sense all the way around. If it's getting into this issue of devolution and something's being forced upon the localities, then we have a problem. I don't think we want to go there.
And beyond the Wi-Fi piece, in terms of technology, a real strong desire, and this is maybe a comment more for WMATA than your committee, but having a regional approach to, you know, a fare system on one smartphone or some sort of card, and, you know, the desire for, you know, WMATA and other groups to really take leadership on that and really try to make some big progress on that. You know, we're hearing other systems around the country are already there or are close to being there, and given how important it is to, you know, get people to the system, the rail, you know, via bus and other things, and having that one integrated system is really going to be key moving forward. So just general comment. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And mindful of time, I have a few comments, but I'll be fairly brief here. First, yes, I echo the point about infrastructure. Well, yeah. I'm sure you do, right? The point about infrastructure, it can't be understated. You can have the best plans, but if you can't execute them because you don't control the infrastructure, where do we end up, right? But beyond that, your slide 3, I think point A was pretty interesting, visibility and marketing. I think that's an issue that many transit agencies struggle with their bus system, is that you look at a subway system map or the metro map, it's fairly iconic. Most people can relate to it. They can, even if they don't use the system regularly, they can tell you how to get to major points of interest, major origin destination pairs. But if you don't ride the bus regularly, most people would not have an idea of where they run or how to get to a different location, you know, case in point. You know, I know how to get to Dulles Airport and back, but that's about it, because I know 5A's there, and that's about it. And I think that's an issue that many agencies struggle with, and I'm just curious, not necessarily for an answer right now, but in future report, whether or not you've seen any successful examples of how that visibility can be increased and how it can be done in a way to get more people that aren't regular users to feel comfortable using bus routes, because that's a major aspect of it, is whether or not they're comfortable, is whether or not they're going to use it in the first place. The other point is really on the issue of flexibility and slide five and some of the things you talked about there between land use connection, flexibility, and on-demand. Obviously, on-demand is kind of big now with all the technology that we have, but in some ways those points are contradictory, and it'd be interesting to see what your thoughts were on that, on how land use, where you typically rely on fixed infrastructure, fixed schedules to kind of generate enough support to have people want to move there and use those facilities, that doesn't really correlate well to the bus systems traditionally, which had the benefit of changing routes to change with, you know, changes in where people live and where people work. So that's my only other point, is how do you address those two somewhat contradictory points moving forward with the bus system, where its nature is very flexible, but at the same point, you want to maximize transit users in the first place. So.
I'd say clearly we know the connection between transportation and land use is fundamental, and that I think we should manifest itself somewhere in this report. And to your point, yes, all bus routes are not going to be, I think, appropriate for some kind of intensive connection that way. But we are proposing things like high-capacity corridors, greater frequencies, dedicated lanes, where you can start to see, if those lanes are utilized to a large degree, that there may be some kind of shift where you can think about with land use and economic development, concentrating growth in certain corridors. A lot of communities have had some success with that don't have a rail system. They've had to rely on high-frequency bus. And so it's not going to solve every problem throughout the region. It's not going to be able to be applicable all throughout the region, but certain places certainly can.
I just, on your marketing question, just a tactic going back to the map, right? So at the MBTA in Boston, they added the 15 key bus routes on their rail map and saw an uptick in ridership for other reasons, but that was certainly one. So again, a small tactic that I think not only reinforces that you're running both systems, not just a rail system, but that you can also market it in such a way that it's clear where you've got connections between bus and rail.
Any comments, any thoughts? Well, thank you. We appreciate your time. Let me just give you one further thought that you think about your last element, implementation. And as there's a lot of things here that require sort of someone to be on top of them, either in the region or at MATA. One thought I had that I would pass on to you is the idea of maybe you want to recommend that there be a bus chief restructuring officer, sort of a bus CRO, whose job, if MATA eventually agrees with these recommendations, the region eventually agrees. His job is to knock heads, to bring the transportation departments together on establishing, you know, bus lanes, who sort of, if you want to devolve routes, who takes it on himself as a point of contact to figure out how to move buses to that local jurisdiction, how to negotiate the space and how to deal with the authorities on moving the subsidies. Because it seems to me that if you want something that is not just a study that stays on the shelf, something that's just not a nothing burger, you know, you've got to sort of recommend some way to move these ideas forward. So I just offer to you for your consideration the idea of some kind of bus czar or bus chief restructuring officer somewhere in Ramada or in one of the regional organizations who would be tasked with moving these recommendations forward into implementation. That is my final thought. All right. Well, thank you very much. We appreciate this. We'll look forward to seeing the final report later in the year and taking action on it at that time. I believe that concludes the business of the committee for today. With no further business, we stand adjourned. I believe, unless the secretary corrects me, that we'll move now directly into the board meeting. So we'll take 5 minutes and move to the board meeting in the next room. Thank you very much. The committee stands adjourned.